You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer.
Well, hello, Travis.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. I'm actually honored. I've seen some really big names that you've interviewed, so I'm glad to be a part of that list now.
Travis, for those that haven't come across you, give us a little snapshot of what's going on hot right now. Why are we talking?
We're talking today about growing your revenue by building your people. I love this topic. You know, this is what I love. I'm a multi-store owner. I'm a board-certified ambulatory care pharmacist, but my passion and my love comes into coaching other pharmacy owners and community pharmacists and their staff through my coaching business called Farm Further.
Travis, I talked to a lot of pharmacy owners, and some of them have either gotten into a specialty of perhaps coaching or perhaps consulting or so on. And I like to ask them always, what percent, let's say, pick whatever length week you want, whether it's 40 or 50 or 60 or 20, whatever you want to pick. If you had it your way, what percent of the time would you be coaching?
So my ideal week would be close to 100%, but not 100% because I think that I have a lot to offer from being an owner and being a pharmacist. So I think being at my store at least part of the time and engaging my own staff into our projects and our goals, I think that gives me a lot of insight into what other pharmacists live and breathe every day. I mean, I always say whenever I speak on stage or teach a class or do a webinar, I always say that I live your crazy every day. And so I can relate to all of the fires you're putting out while you're trying to be a pharmacist and a business owner and a leader.
Would it be fair to say that your staff are guinea pigs?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We test things all the time. They know that we do. Every year at our annual retreat, it's kind of a, what does he have planned now? You know, so
let's say that your coaching just took off. You write this book and the world's on fire for Travis. What percent would you feel you would still have to be?
You know, I do my days different than most because I structure so that I'm here every day, but I have little parts of the day that I have windows. And so I don't think it would have to be very big because I can still know what's going on being within the four walls. You know, I like to come in and open the store and work the case for an hour, but then I got 2 hours of time before someone needs me to cover a lunch break. And then lunch breaks get through, and then I have another 2 to 3 hour block in the afternoon, you know, where I can coach. So I think I'm here every day, so I think I don't have to be there very often because I'm here and I can coach from here, but then I can have the in-between times to help the staff and kind of know what's going on. And I think it changes too on what's going on in our industry. You know, if we've got a virus taking over our workflow, then that looks different than summer when everyone's trying to be on vacation.
I mean, sometimes just being in my store, taking a foot in there just through the grapevine, or someone walking quickly through your office, not even talking to you, just under there, or maybe just, you know, thinking out loud as they're walking through their office, you pick up some of those gems that you can use. You know, you can use down the road.
I think one reason too why I'm not on a specific percentage is what's different about me is I really work to teach you how to fish and not give you fish. So with my coaching, I don't do contracts. So if you come to me and you have a specific project you want to work on, or if we need to work on your culture, the minute that you feel like you can do it without me, then I take that as a compliment that I really equipped you for success. And so you just let me know that you don't need to continue the next month. And I've got clients that have done a specific project, and then we graduate them out. I've got some who we've improved their culture, and then we graduate them out, and then a few months later they have a new project to work on, so they come back. And I have some that say that they can't live without me, and they've never have, you know, ended their services. They just continue on and on and on. And so I think it's really just meeting pharmacy owners where they're at. And so the point is not to tie them into this year-long contract or longer and not be providing any value. I think it holds me accountable to be providing value every single month in order for them to renew the next month. And if they are not getting value, then the whole purpose of Farm Further is to move the community pharmacy profession forward. And so as we continue to take on coaching clients, you know, I've added some staff to help me with this because the capacity is obviously there with just one person. So you got to add other coaches and subject matter experts. But as we've moved through that, I need to be graduating people out so they can keep the profession moving forward. And that's the whole purpose.
Yeah. Well, so Travis, you and I were going to talk months ago and it didn't quite work out with our schedule. And so we finally met up here and I was online trying to get more information of currently what was happening with you. And it seems like everything that I clicked on, all I was seeing was pharmacist of the year, pharmacist of the year. Pharmacist of the year. I couldn't get into any meat and potatoes because that's what was on every search result I found. So what's going on with that? Who are you pharmacist of the year for and when?
They've been compiled over probably the last 4 to 6 years or so, just from various organizations, anything from something local to something international, a couple of national ones. And you know, most of them I'm surprised by, so I'm not sure how they get a hold of me or my name or my info. That's a great question. Maybe, yeah, I don't have anything for you on that one.
Maybe one of them did their homework and then the rest of them just say, well, he's good enough for them. He's got to be good enough for us.
Yeah, potentially so. You know, I think just, trying to do the right thing and take care of people the best that you can. And people talk about that.
All right. I know you're being humble, but give me some examples. And if you don't, I'm going to because I did my research. Give me an example of what one place might have said about you. Is it because you're such a nice person, or is it because you had some revenue ideas maybe that you put into place?
It's probably a combination. I think what interests people when they come with those awards, because some of them I've actually have asked, you know, because I'm not sure why I was the one to receive that.
That's really funny.
And it's kind of like your podcast, you know. A couple of the organizations, there are people who I really respect as role models. And so Whenever, and they've won that award before from that organization. So then whenever I dive into that, I think this is a responsibility to have this award. Now I have to go help other people. You know, I got to be held accountable.
Right.
But I think what it comes down to with why they're so interested is I'm just a really rare hybrid of a pharmacist, of a person. And what I mean by that is most pharmacists are kind of their wheelhouse is pretty specific, okay? With me, the rare hybrid comes this combination of pharmacist who is a pharmacy owner, a multi-store owner, who is also a clinical expert, so board certified in ambulatory care pharmacy. As I began to teach pharmacists across the nation, I learned that while I knew this stuff, I needed to learn how to teach it better. So I went to University of Connecticut College of Pharmacy well after graduation to get a teaching certificate so I could learn how to teach what I knew.
You wanted to teach more, but that wasn't individually yet. Was that more like group things?
That is going to be people calling me because they saw me speak at a conference about some kind of clinical something, and I'm trying to teach them how to put this into their store.
So you needed help actually on teaching one-to-one.
One-to-one, yeah.
And you went and got a certificate for that.
Yeah, yeah, a teaching certificate. So I could actually learn the concepts of, you know, learning styles and visual representation and phonography and how can we, you know, everyone learns a different way. And so just because I understand it doesn't mean that I can teach people and help them.
Where did you get that from?
University of Connecticut College of Pharmacy.
It was through a pharmacy school, but it was a teaching certificate through there.
Yeah.
How long was that program?
A little over a year.
And you actually signed up for a year of school to get a certificate to be able to teach one-on-one better.
I did.
Wow.
And then it gets worse. So after I did that, so now I'm trying to help people and teach them what I know, you know, clinical based. And then it comes down to everything that you want to implement or start in your pharmacy. It comes down to people. It comes down to engaging your people. And so you have to know the psychology behind what motivates people. So after using the teaching certificate with my ambulatory care pharmacy and my pharmacy owner background for a while, probably a couple of years at that point, I realized we got to get more people involved. So then I went to another longer program with Cornell, and I did a psychology of leadership program through Cornell so that I could learn a little bit more about what motivates people. And so I've got this rare hybrid where I'm a clinical pharmacist who is a pharmacy owner, who has the teaching certificate, who also has this psychology of leadership. And that's really where I've had the most probably return on my investment, is being able to tell pharmacy owners exactly how to meet their staff at their demands. And it's really fun whenever someone comes to me wanting to fire somebody, and then we just help them communicate a little easier. And then they both end up winning and the employee ends up staying. That doesn't always happen. You know, sometimes they choose not to work for the owner. But so I think that's where all those awards come from. To go back to your original question, it's just a rare hybrid of someone who knows their material, can teach the material, and then can tell you how to engage your staff to that material as they teach it. And so I don't see a lot of people like that out there.
Yeah, that's a really nice mix. If you were not able to tell anybody about your teaching certificate or about your psychology certificate, if you were never able to put that behind your name or put it on your website and so on, would you still have done it because it was that beneficial? Or is part of that because of the association then that you knew you could add it to the end of your initials or your website or your business or whatever? How much of that was which, as far as learning versus, this might help me in a association sense?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say that I would still absolutely have done the psychology of leadership, and I've continued other studies in that. I've learned so much, been able to share about that. The teaching certificate is probably on the table. I did learn quite a bit from that, but I also, it was really geared towards teaching pharmacy-based stuff.
Gotcha.
But I would say probably the board certification in ambulatory care pharmacy, that was probably for initials more than anything, because I can apply how to run a clinic inside your pharmacy a lot better than what that test prepares you for anyway. And so I don't think, you know, that was probably more for the initials. What I would say, though, if you even took all those off my website and from behind my name, I think what that gives me, if I don't care if people know I did that or not, but I think what that gives me is, you know, this morning I was coaching a pharmacy owner, and they have a lot of pharmacists that work for them. And what they said to me is that the unique thing is that I can take a complicated theory of something and I can tie it to very real life actionable items and analogies so that people can understand. And so I think that I gained enough from those experiences. That's what really makes it unique, is that I can explain some of that down. They don't have to know all of the psychology behind it. If they want to know, I'm happy to share. What they need to know is how they need to talk to their employee, how they need to track and metrics their goals so they can implement things successfully. They need to know these analogies so they can understand how that employee is seeing things in their eyes, so they can understand, was that a good investment for my business? What is that return on my investment? When should I expect that return? How do I, you know, if you go look at business plans, they're all theory and bookwork. So how do we apply that to your actual book of business, and how do we let you know whether you were successful or not? And I think with pharmacists especially, they struggle with this, because here's kind of a counterintuitive balance we have here. Many pharmacists are type A people who like to know what's expected, what's predicted, They really like that black and white area. They don't care for the gray areas. Okay?
Yeah.
Yet we have chosen to be in a business as pharmacy owners where we have very little control over how much money we're going to make every year. And most of us have no idea what we're going to make until we get to tax time. Because
our
cash flow is so different. And so it is so counterintuitive that all these type A personalities go into a business where they have very little control over the outcome.
That's for sure. Do you ever talk to an owner and someone else at the same time and you're like the referee, or is it always just consulting or coaching and they're always going back and then doing it on their own?
Yeah, so it's different every time. I do prefer the term coach as opposed to consultant because I think a coach is someone who's actually done it. So since I've actually have owned and am a pharmacist and do work with my people every day, I think that I do, you know, I prefer coach, but you know, I have pharmacy owners, basically I ask them what they want. So I have some who are pretty introverted and they would just soon be a part of the team. I can lead team meetings via webinar. I can lead instructional webinars about various things they want their staff to learn about. Some owners have me work one-on-one with just certain staff members that maybe need a little budge in the right direction.
Wow. So there's times where you'll be talking sometimes only to the employee without even the boss there.
Yeah, that's pretty often actually. And then I have some that I'll coach through the owner, you know, I'll coach through them. So here's the verbiage you need to use. Here's how you need to approach this problem. Here's how you need to track it to know if you're successful. Here's how you need to work with this individual. Here's what's important to them. Here's what motivates them. And they can take that information and they can do it themselves if they would like to. For me, it's just meeting them if wherever they need me. So if they want that, that's fine. If they want me to work with someone, that's fine. I have one person who has me talk to anyone that they're going to onboard ahead of time.
Really?
And so that's been fun. I think what's been really fun for me, I've had several non-pharmacist owners who have got these goals and these KPIs set out for their pharmacist. Many of them are multi-store owners. And then they can't communicate these metrics and these KPIs down to the pharmacist who are managing the stores. And so it's been really fun for me to connect those dots for them and work with that pharmacist one-on-one and communicate that owner's goals into that pharmacist so they can get into their workflow. And I don't know if it's because it's pharmacist to pharmacist or it's, you know, I think a lot of them think, well, they've never done this before because they're not a pharmacist and that's why they're not listening to the owner. I don't know why they run into that, but it's been fun for me to connect the dots so that everybody wins on both sides of the table.
Yeah, that's really cool. How many people cry a week to you?
Usually at least one, sometimes three.
Is that right?
You know, people are unpredictable. And so they have no idea what they're going to walk into on Monday morning. And that, you know, it's part of that total care package on my website is being fully accessible. And I only take so many people in that package because I've had one that was really having pushback from a couple of employees. And this is several years ago. This is early on in the coaching. And so I had equipped them to kind of stand up for themselves and to kind of take a stand. And so she's going to have this employee meeting and the staff showed up late. And so she ended up locking the door and then didn't let them in for the meeting. This is not my advice, by the way. This is just her. She's one that wanted me to coach her. And then in that instance and in a lot of instances, the staff don't even know about me. And that's good. That's good with me. You know, they don't have to know about me. They need to know that their leader is capable of leading them. So that's great with me. So after she gets out of the meeting, she goes and unlocks the door, wishes these two girls have been standing outside, good day to you, happy morning. And then she goes and locks herself in the bathroom and calls me. What do I do now? And so I'm
right.
You know, so yeah, so it happens. But at the end of the day, all of the people I coach, they're people too. And people are unpredictable. So that's what keeps it fun. But I love that part of it. And I love that we're not always able to know what our day is going to look like. And that's okay. It's okay to be able to pivot and look at it. I had one coaching client that hired a pharmacist recently. And that pharmacist ended up just being completely crazy. And it was really interesting to work through, and it helped the owner really grow a lot. I mean, it really, really did.
Do you think it's good or bad that a pharmacist is like 5 feet from these people all day, you know, working right with them? Is that a good thing? Or do you think that just adds to more frustration because people are working so closely?
I think it's a really good thing. I think where it becomes a bad thing is when the pharmacist is doing everything from start to finish. And so I find pharmacy owners are kind of on two ends of the spectrum right now. And I find that either they have went to extra trainings and they've sent their staff to extra trainings and they have really high output clinical programs already inside their four walls, or they are working inside doctor's offices and doing incident two visits and that kind of thing. Or they're on the other end of the spectrum where even if it's something simple as MTM or a flu shot, and the pharmacist is doing everything from start to finish. And so I think that that is where it becomes a bad thing, being all right there, accessible in the same room, is because the pharmacist just takes over and does all that instead of empowering their staff to take on some of the beyond dispensing activities. If we don't engage our support staff, then it's very costly to do business. And you can take several programs where you're maybe it's a required activity that doesn't pay out a whole lot of money, but it's still required. So CMR completion could be a really good example. Most pharmacists think that MTM is a four-letter word, and they don't like putting the time into it. And do we make enough money through a CMR to pay for that pharmacist for an hour of their time? Absolutely not. We don't. Can you calculate your CMR completion rate to your DAR fees, though? Absolutely, you can. So does it become required? Absolutely, it does. But if you've got a pharmacist doing everything from start to finish, you're paying the $60 an hour, it becomes very costly and you're losing money on that activity each time. But if you've got a clerk doing part of it at minimum wage, and you have a technician doing it at a little bit higher technician wage, and then you have a pharmacist coming in for the therapeutic decision making, all of a sudden where you were losing money, it becomes at least break even, if not profitable. And what I see here is that if pharmacists want to be providers, if they're asking to be providers, then they have to be willing to look like a provider. And when you go into a pharmacy and the pharmacist is still doing everything from start to finish, I mean, think about your doctor, Mike. When was the last time the doctor themselves called you to remind you of your appointment? They checked you in at the front desk. They checked your insurance card. Then they took you back and took your blood pressure. They took your weight and your temperature. I mean, a lot of doctor's offices, the doctor doesn't even triage you anymore. Now they have a nurse or a medical assistant triage you. Why are you here today, Mike? And then they put in a note, and then the physician comes in for 5 minutes to use their clinical decision making. And then a lot of times they document there and they're gone to the next patient. And that's the business model we got to have in pharmacy as we move forward. If it's something simple as a flu shot, or something more complicated as billing for a clinical office visit inside your pharmacy, all of those require the same building blocks to have the support and auxiliary staff trained and equipped to do everything at the top of their license. And that's where your profit changes so much, because now you're paying $10 an hour for something you previously been paying $60.
Sometimes if you're the owner and if you're within earshot, it's always so tempting to want to jump in. That other hat that you've set up just never launches because that pharmacist always has an ear to that and kind of wants to keep things in their position. If you can spread them out sometimes, maybe some of those things would take off a little bit more quickly.
Yeah, and I think we have a lot to learn, but I think people who started this first would be your functional medicine pharmacist who started doing office visits. And if you'll notice, anyone seeing a patient that's a pharmacist in a functional medicine setting, if you notice, they never work the register. That's something you're taught. They see the patient for the visit, and they might not even pull the product. They might pull the product off the shelf and hand it to you. And then you go to the register to meet one of the pharmacy clerks, and now you're no longer tied to that product and its sale. You're tied to your expertise and the advice you gave inside that office. Whereas if you follow them to the register, you're still giving out free information. And it's not about ripping patients off. I'm not saying that. It's more about providing value. And, you know, I am not motivated by money. However, we have to have money to keep our doors open. So if we're not doing this profitably, then our patients really suffer because our doors at some point close.
In our pharmacy, I've been working a lot more in there lately because I've had some staff quit and I've let go some. We've gotten tighter. A lot of that's just because of some of the writing on the wall of maybe people hearing me complain all the time about the decreased spread and things like that. But it takes commitment that I will rarely handle something in the pharmacy that someone else can handle. So I don't know how to work the register, and I'll rarely answer a phone on insurance. I'll rarely answer something else. If I'm a pharmacist at the time, even though maybe I'm no longer qualified, I'm joking, no one else knows that really. So I'll answer all the pharmacy questions and stuff that no one else should be answering. But anything else, sometimes it's tempting to do it, but if I don't take the time to hand that off and for someone else to have the confidence of me handing it off to them, you can get yourself in a heap of trouble.
Yeah, and you're rare. You know, not a lot of pharmacists do that. A lot of them want total control of that. I mean, I've got...
Well, Travis, they're not as lazy as I am.
Oh, no.
I can teach that.
They just need to start a podcast, right? So that way they have other other ways to spend their time. You're rare, though. Most people don't do that. Most of them want that hands-on. Many pharmacy owners are very hesitant to take a vacation or to go home early. I mean, I've got one pharmacy owner that I'm coaching right now. They want help with their transition from, you know, they don't want to sell their store, but they don't want to work every day. And so I say, I can identify those key steps to get you there, but I need to know what there looks like. And so they got to have the guts to say whatever that is. They want to leave at 2 o'clock every day. They want to work 2 days a week instead of seven. You know, they have to have the guts to say that. And most pharmacists don't. They just feel like they're full on all the time.
Is your deliverable different in many cases? Sometimes it's just, all right, I'm on the phone with this lady who's crying in the bathroom, and my deliverable there to her was the words I spoke to her, you know, over those 10 minutes. Where somebody else, is it ever like a Microsoft 3-page document to like show that, okay, we're done? This sort of is symbolic of what you signed up for, and I'm going to put this into a paper or a PDF to sort of, if not anything else, just to symbolically capture the end of it. Do you have like a physical symbol, if nothing else, to say we're done, we've agreed with what we have and we're done and we can carry on, but this is, you know, proof of that?
Yes. So people come to me for all different reasons, okay? If they come to me wanting help starting a new clinical service, or they want to get accredited, maybe, like let's say that they want to be accredited for diabetes education, that is easily a start and finish. I can tell them exactly what needs to be done, and based on how much time they want to put into it, they can be done in a couple months. The stuff that is culture building is, you know, I want them to see how I think so that they can be equipped to do it by themselves. A lot of culture building, what is different about the way I do it is I like to use implementation of things that will benefit the pharmacy anyway. And so if they use their staff to build in these implementation strategies, then it builds culture because the staff can see how their contribution contributes to the overall store goals and success. And so that's what I love to do, is to do that. So with that said, you're asking about PDFs and all this stuff. I design so many custom documents for people because the things that we do and the services we provide have a lot to do with tracking the metrics. And a lot of pharmacists don't know how to track it to know if they actually were successful or not. Of all of the CEs I've taught, of all of the programs I've been involved in, I can teach the theory behind how to do stuff. I can tell them a lot of scenarios. Here's what I would do if. But the minute I pull out my personal tracking documents that I've used in my store, or if I show them tracking documents that I've used for other pharmacy owners, the minute I pull out those documents, everybody's eyes light up. I mean, it's like the gold. And so for me, if I can give them a document that they can use forever and for always, that is like a check, maybe it's a checklist. You know, I had one pharmacist who, his goal when he came to me, I want my store to run the same way that it, when I'm not there, as it runs whenever I am there. And so I said, well, let's talk about what that looks like. What does it look like when you're there, when you're not there? And so it became that he was filling in a lot of gaps of running certain reports and asking people to do stuff. And essentially, he did the same exact stuff every single week to make sure all the metrics have been met. And I said, what if we just made a checklist of all the things you're already doing, and then you send me your strengths and weaknesses of all your employees, and I'll help you pick who the best person is to do this task that you want done all the time. And then they can run that report, and they can do that whether you're there or not there. And then as long as that's being executed every single day, every single week, every single month, then you know you'll be on track. And what that does is it creates a system at that workstation. And what I love about systems is if you have an adjustment that needs to be made because maybe a mistake's getting made, or you're not meeting your margins, or you have a product that you're carrying or a service you're offering and you're not getting the desired results, then it's really nice to have that system because it's a lot easier to adjust the system. And then any employee that touches that now is following the new system, as opposed to figuring out, oh, well, Mike did it this way and Travis does it this way. So who did it? Who can we do? You know, who's going to be responsible for fixing this? So those checklists ultimately create systems. And so my clients get so many different types of documents. The other thing that is really unique is I have a very unique way that I do action plans. And so after every call, you get an action plan from me. And it literally says, Mike will do this by this time. Travis will do this for Mike by this time. Mike has an employee called Michael. And Travis will do this call with Michael about this topic. And so it's very specific action plans. And then there's a lot of notes next to my other action columns. People can actually get the background to kind of jog their memory about why we talked about that and why we're doing that and how we know it's important. And so that action plan that gets sent is really unique, I think, because a lot of coaching that happens, you're making your own notes and then you're kind of on your own. But with the action plan, you know exactly what you need to get done, and it keeps you on track by when. If people haven't taken care of their business, they don't book their next call. And then what happens is they go 2 or 3 months and then they're mad because they've been paying you and they didn't get any results, but they didn't take any action. And so
they didn't take any action.
Right. And so now if I'm calling them to book a call, if I know which package has how many calls a month, then I can check in with them. Hey, you're due for a call next week. What day works for you? What time you want to do it? And then they know I'm going to be doing that. So that way they have to be completing those lead measures every single week. They can't just wait until the week before our next call. They have those in their calendar and then try to rush and get it all done halfway.
Devil's advocate, you said every call, but there's some calls that are maybe just extensions, like our lady friend that was in the bathroom calling you. Now, that was a quicker answer kind of thing, right? So am I correct to say that, well, maybe not that, that was kind of a nudge, or does even that get documented?
So that's going to be a follow-up later. So that's kind of in the heat of the moment. So we're going to help her, you know, help herself. And then I need to know that the advice I gave her and what she did with that advice turned out well for her.
So you'll actually remember that, and then you'll say, hey, well, we're going to write this down. We'll maybe talk about it next time. And then that'll turn into an action of some homework or something she has to practice on or something.
Yeah, so she was one that actually paid me to coach, and she didn't own the store. She was a pharmacist, and she was managing it, and her owner actually didn't see the value in a coach. Her owner wouldn't pay for it. So she paid me out of her own pocket to coach her. So her staff didn't know about me. And so on that particular instance, we're talking in the morning because she had the meeting before work. And so I just texted her and let her know, hey, do you want to go to your car and chat on your lunch break? Or you want me to call you when the store closes? And so then I follow up to see if how I told her to handle it worked out or not. And in that way, if something went south, I can help her navigate what the next steps are to try to fix it.
They know that consistently over time, you're always going to have their best interest in mind because of not only all your skills, but that relationship that you have.
Well, and I'm personally vested because what I realize is if my stores are doing everything perfectly right, then there's no way that my few stores alone can save the profession of pharmacy. So I have to have them working at top efficiency so that they're profitable and keep their doors open so that as a whole, we keep community pharmacy open and moving forward. And I do probably change day to day, but it's because I have an open and a growth mindset so that I'm learning every day. I mean, I had a revelation last week. There is a particular problem that we see in some of our compounding pharmacists. And I have identified last week that there is a common personality trait in a personality test they can do that always predicts this problem. And so I'm learning as I go because I've helped navigate through this. And as I'm talking to a new pharmacy owner, a new to my coaching last week, they're telling me about this pharmacist, and it is almost as if it's the same person working at a pharmacy in another state for another person I coach. And so I asked them, hey, do this psychology test. I want the results. They sent it to me. And they're the same person. And so another issue that I've seen is if you have someone that's a technician who is kind of a relator and really likable, they're not really great with lead measures. They're not a very good implementer. But they get hired more often because they're relatable. And so are they good with your customers? Absolutely. Are they going to remember to do what the customer asked them to do so that it's right next time? Probably not. And so they need lead measures to really succeed and excel. And so helping the pharmacy owner know that helps that person stay successful where their customers are happy, but the owner's happy too because the employee stayed happy and they're performing.
Travis, I know that probably all the people you coach are just lovely personalities you like to talk to, but let's just pretend that there were some personalities that you did not like to coach. What kind of people would those be? And how do you deal with that, like, stress or boredom or...
So I really don't have a personality that I don't like. I mean, the personalities don't bother me, and they are a range. I mean, I've got people who I've had other pharmacists tell me, I can't believe you coach this person, or I can't believe you coach that person. I don't know how you could ever do it. The personalities don't bother me. What bothers me is when they're not willing to help themselves, and they're not willing to put in some of the time that's required to fix the problems. Because, again, could I come in and fix those problems? Absolutely. But does that help our profession? Absolutely not. I need to teach them how to fix it. And I, you know, depending on what package they choose, I do become more of an operations manager. But ultimately, I'm going to put the ball into their court to be responsible for the performance and the action. And so how do I handle that? I fire them. You know, I come up and I talk to them and I say, I don't think you're getting any value out of the time that we're spending together. And because of that, you're wasting your money that you're paying me. And furthermore, it's not helping our profession if we don't do something about these problems we know that we have. And so sometimes that's a really easy conversation to have, and sometimes it's really hard. You know, I've had a couple who it took me some convincing to convince them that it didn't make sense for us to work together. Because they really wanted the help and they really wanted the access to me. But at the end of the day, they were paralyzed and not taking any action based on the recommendations. So if I call and we're having the same problem as we had last month, but we've done nothing to try to fix it, then do we start all over again from scratch? Do we go back to the drawing board? You know, so yeah, I don't think there's a personality I don't like, but I want them to be passionate about community pharmacy. I want them to be passionate about the people that work for them, and I want them to really have their heart into it. And if they're not, then I've had some that are too busy. So why don't you pass me to someone who does have the time to be that champion on your team? And that can be a lead technician. I've got one pharmacy owner who we have done a number of things for them. Sometimes it starts really simple. You know, sometimes it's they don't have an adherence program. So we need to build a sync model so they can develop the time and the resources to work on all these other things. You know, that's where our relationship started. And I built this enormous sync program through their technicians. And a few weeks ago, this pharmacy owner had her house plowed over by a tornado. She doesn't have a home. She doesn't have any cars. She doesn't have anything. And so she makes one call to me, and I'm able to coach her technicians to run the sync program from afar. She can call some relief pharmacist in who knows nothing about it. They just need to be there to unlock the door and check prescriptions. And we ran her store for 2 weeks that way.
What percent of your calls are, I imagine, phone versus video chat?
They're almost always phone. I do have a percentage of, like, you know, I do the Zoom videos, or I I might have like some slides, or I might want to show them an interface, or I might want to see what they're looking at. So let's say that they use a dispensing system different than what I use. A lot of the major ones I'm very good at, even if I don't use that system. But they might have a rare dispensing system that I've not ever seen or dealt with. And so I'll have them share their screen. You know, show me where you see that number at. Show me where you're getting that metric from. Let's find out where that comes from. So, you know, those are more like the video and the share screen. I've got a lot of people who just really don't understand how to interpret their Equip dashboard into actionable items, you know. I showed a gentleman four different things he could do from his Equip dashboard, and it made him $80,000 last year. And so people just don't know how to interpret all the data we have. And that's the thing. Pharmacies are just mega data sources. We have so much data at our fingertips. And so yeah, to answer your question, a lot of it is on the phone. However, I do a lot of it with sharing those screens.
Do you like phone better?
I really don't have a preference. You know, most people don't like the video. And what I find is I have my video on and theirs is off. And so,
really?
Yeah. People just don't like to see themselves on camera. So I do the phone because most people are more comfortable with it, especially if it's a support personnel. A pharmacist will get on the camera a lot easier. But if you tell a technician that they're doing a call with some person they don't know, there's no way they're going to turn the video on.
Maybe it's just the mood I'm in right now. I think the people that would drive me nuts would be the ones that are giving excuses. And I suppose most people that hire you probably aren't in this position because of the fact they put money and time out to hire you. If I was a psychiatrist or psychologist and I was talking to someone and maybe it was like court ordered or they didn't want to be there, I think the one for me would be like excuses. And instead of them coming out and just saying, well, no, I'm afraid to do that, or I don't want that confrontation, or I'm angry at that person or something, it would be all of this, like all of this fluff up in the air that you'd have to break through. And maybe I don't like it so much because maybe I do that all the time in my head. And we know that we don't like the stuff that we do sometimes. But I think that's the one that would probably drive me the most crazy.
Well, you have to remember that I'm trying to grow people. So when I say that I'm going to grow your revenue by building people, sometimes the people are the pharmacy staff, and sometimes the people is you. Sometimes there are major issues among the staff, but sometimes the owner needs to grow in their personal growth as well, and their expectations and how they're communicating those expectations. And you do have some who really do avoid the conflict. And so you have to work into that with them and help them understand that the relationships that are worth keeping are built on trust and conflict management. And you can have good goals, you can have good KPIs, you can be executing lead measures, but if you don't have the trust and the conflict management, if you think about your very best friend, have you ever been in a fight with them that you worked through later? If you are married, have you ever had a fight with your wife that you worked through? And did that make your relationship stronger?
We work it through just because she's right.
Well, of course she is. Exactly. But you had to grow as a person to know that.
I had to understand that, though.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're investing in that deeper.
Yeah, exactly. I have one I'm coaching that feels like staff are incapable of doing what they're asking. But what the reality is, they don't know how to communicate what they're asking. So it comes down to the pharmacist actually growing a little bit and learning, here's how to communicate with this type of personality. And there's all this psychology behind there. And if they want to know it, they can know it, but they don't have to. I can give them real life stuff. Oh, that technician needs lead measures to be successful. They need to be able to monitor your equip scores. They need to be pulling your will call bin every 2 weeks. They need to be sending back your wholesaler return every week. And then you have things where, pharmacy owners have this performance expectancy, and this has been proven by Harvard, where when you give a technician or a clerk or any kind of staff member a task, you've automatically decided in your head how they're going to perform on that task. So if you think about your rock star employee who just can never get it wrong, you give them new projects and they're always doing it better than you would have ever thought to do it. And then you have your kind of bad apple at the other end of the spectrum. And no matter what you give them, you've tried, they're not really bad enough to get fired, but you're giving them different projects here and there and trying to find something they're good at. Well, what happens is you have assigned this project to them. You've subconsciously decided how they're going to perform on that. And then it leads you, without even knowing you're doing it, to micromanage that person. You're checking in with them on progress. And what happens is you shut down their creative thinking. So they can no longer learn along the way. They cannot have this accelerated learning. Your rock star that can do everything right, they have this growth mindset where they learn while they're doing, and they have this accelerated learning curve because you give them the freedom. And so teaching pharmacy owners, they've got this one person. Maybe they just need to cut them a little bit of slack and not micromanage them so much.
I know we pharmacists, we put a ton of our staff into double binds, We're saying one day we're crabbing because they're not focused enough on the, some project. The next day we're crabbing at them because they're not attentive enough to the customers that are coming in. And it's like, well, you just told me the day before to have my, because of the mood you were in, you told me to have my nose in the computer doing this, and you've just made it impossible for me to hit both of those standards you've given to me.
And we don't realize that a lot of times. I mean, I see that happen all the time. People don't realize that time is like a budget. And so what they're doing is overdrawing their accounts on those people because they unlock the door on their store about the same time every day. And they lock the door on their store the same time every day. Notice I didn't say close, because most pharmacy owners stay well past close. But they kind of have an idea of when they're going to go home and when they're going to come in. And so when you ask someone who already has a full plate to do something new, now you have to go back and identify what can be cut out. What is less important so they have time to do this new project?
Tell me what a perfect day would look like for you about 3 years from now. Would it look pretty close to what you are now, or how would it differ from what you're doing now?
3 years from now, I feel like I would be doing even more coaching. I would be available to my stores, but I wouldn't be actually managing them. I would be working through other managers. I would do a lot of hands-on learning with my coaching members, so that I could really meet them in an attempt to accelerate their learning. And so, yeah, my perfect day, I think, is more coaching and less pharmacisting. However, like I said, I don't ever want that to be 100%, because I do want to be in the know and understand what current events are happening, so that whenever I get that crazy letter from Express Scripts or Caremark, I can quickly pass a message and relate it. Or if I have a certain employee issue, I mean, with coronavirus right now, there are 8 different states who we've discovered don't have a secure portal for their Employment Security Commission. And Oklahoma is one of those 8 states. And so in this coronavirus world where we have all of this unemployment going on, there are a ton of fraudulent unemployment claims being turned in to the Securities Commission. I coach one store who's had 13 claims of people who have never worked for them, ever. And you have 10 days to catch that. So I think being in the store, being a business owner and knowing that kind of stuff, I can now call all my people in those 8 states and say, okay, you got to watch your mail because pharmacy owners don't do that very well. And you got to catch these within 10 days.
You have ownership or you own the 3 pharmacies you've talked about?
Yeah, so we run the 2 locations. So we bought 3, and then the second one we bought, we combined under the location of the first.
And who is we?
My wife and I have a business partner as well who's also a pharmacist.
Will there be a day that you say, I want to be involved in a pharmacy and, you know, be able to walk around and do my stuff, but I don't want any ownership. I just want to coach.
I'm not sure yet. That might come someday. I really like the business part behind owning a store.
And the ownership really gets your heart into it.
Yeah, I really like being able to track all those metrics and implement these new systems into the challenges that change every single day. And the other thing is, you know, with my coaching business, I love to coach 100%. I love that. And I want to be doing more of that, but I'm different in that I really want the pharmacist to have access to the subject matter expert. And so with Farm Further, I don't have to be the expert on everything, because that's what happens a lot in coaching businesses. People, if they see a need, then they need to go become the expert of that. So they're going to go learn about this and try to help their clients, right? But I don't see that with Farm Further. I see that if somebody needs help with DIR fees, then I'm going to use some of the money that they're paying me to go pay Benjamin Jolly. You know, he's been on your show. And I'm going to have him help them because he knows so much more about that than I do. If I know somebody who needs help with inventory management, I'm going to help pay for them to go see Joe Williams, you know? If they need help doing clinical services and incident 2 visits, I'm going to send them to the Avant Institute with Amina Abubakar, you know? So it's about not having to be the one who knows everything, but getting them to someone who knows far more about it than I do. And then what happens is they go to these subject matter experts, and most of the subject matter experts, they don't like to do what Amina calls hand-holding, okay? They want to teach you how to be successful and then turn you loose. So now I can use what they're paying me to go find this subject matter expert in whatever they want to accomplish. But then once they have the knowledge, they can return back to me and I can help with an implementation plan so that they continue to implement what they've learned from this person and be successful into their own business model.
Is there anything, and if there is, what's the biggest spread between what you preach but you don't practice? Is there anything that you say, I know this is the right thing to do. I know I'm teaching my team this, but I struggle with that personally. Is there anything like that?
Well, I am far from perfect. So there are lots of things that I'm sure I don't practice. I would say the one thing I've had the hardest time with is time blocking, because I do like being that all access pass, and I do like task completion. And so it's hard for me to walk away from something before it's complete. But also, you know, part of my mentality of growing up in a pharmacy and being available on the bench when people walk in the door, it is hard to schedule things if you're on the bench because you have no idea. You know, the other day I was about to go home early, and I had other pharmacists. I've got 5 pharmacists that work for me, and they were going to cover for me at my busy store. And a lady comes in who I know really well. She's one of my good patients. I go out and I'm talking to her, and she needs help picking out a Band-Aid for this sore that she has. And so they're filling her prescription. Like, well, sure, let me help you with that, you know. So I go down. So while I'm headed over to the first aid section, she takes off her shoe and takes off her sock. She says, I got this little sore that won't go away. And I could see the bone of her toe on the bottom of her foot. And so now I'm thinking, well, I was headed out the door, but now we got to get an ambulance or we got to get her to an ER. I could see her bone. And she's already lost one toe on her other foot. And she's in here looking for a Band-Aid and some Neosporin, you know? So I would say that's my biggest thing is it's hard for me to time block. I'm very good at scheduling, and I do very, very much value my family time. And so I do shut things off in the evening for a period of time until my kid's in bed. And so I would like to, when my kids are in bed, I want to be able to go do things on my own time. And so occasionally that stuff overflows and I got to work on that late at night. You know, I might be sending action plans or documents, you know, 11 o'clock or midnight, but I want it to be complete and I want them to have what I offered them. So that's the hardest thing for me, probably.
What authors do you like?
So many authors. I am a really big Jim Collins fan.
Good to Great and Get the Right People on the Bus and all this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, and why I like him so much. I mean, I have a whole list of authors I can give you based on what you're trying to accomplish. But why I like him so much is a lot of his research and studies have been based on businesses that had to achieve a definition of great that he defined, which was a very strenuous definition of itself. But they had to maintain that greatness for 15 years to even qualify for his research. And so if you think about the average pharmacy owner, if they're going to own their business on average 20 to 30 years, can you imagine actually being at your prime for half or more of your career? I mean, to be truly in your prime with ultimate performance, to be able to do that for over half of your career is just phenomenal. I also really like a lot of authors that actually get highlighted by like Harvard Business Review. I really get into a lot of things that they find. It's actually really interesting. I had an article I read in the HBR by a couple of authors, Marcus Buckingham and Ashley Goodall. And they had a philosophy on feedback, and they called it the feedback fallacy. And so a couple of key points from that, and there are several I could go over, but for time's sake, a couple of key points from that. Excellence is subjective. And so whoever the manager, the leader, the owner is in the store, what they define as excellent is different than how the employee defines excellence. And so you can't always put into words what you think is excellent, and it becomes a difficult conversation to communicate that through. And so they brought up a point of when an employee does something that they should be doing, you should praise them. Well, pharmacy owners, a lot of them will say, I hate praising people because it seems fake and I don't want to sound fake. I want it to be real. And so if you can catch someone in the act of doing something that you really liked, they came up with a phrase where you can say, that, yes, that. You point at them and you say that, yes, that. And then all the other employees see that. And it's phenomenal because now it's very current in everyone's mind as to what just happened with that customer service experience, with that misfill, with the error that was made. However they fix that, whatever they did they liked, that, yes, that. So now that employee knows what they did was great, but everyone around them knows, wow, that's how Travis wants that done as the pharmacy manager. And so then what you get into is people don't always know what you're talking about. It was just second nature. That was what they always do. So what did they do that was so special? So then you can come back with their next step is, did you see what you did there? And then whenever they can't answer that, because that happens sometimes too, then you can say, let me tell you what that looked like to me. And so now, in a few seconds, your whole staff has learned exactly what excellence looks like in your eyes should this come up again. And so they had that feedback fallacy and all of the problems wrong with feedback. Because what we tell managers is you need to give your staff more feedback. You need to give them more feedback. And I talked to a pharmacy owner last week. They have a daily, sometimes twice daily huddle. They have a weekly meeting, they have a monthly meeting, and they have a quarterly meeting. They have a one-on-one meeting with every staff member every month. I mean, they are meeting out their ears and they're not getting results. And so it has to do with how you're giving those feedback sessions and how you're measuring whether what they're going to do with that information is successful or not. The best plan is only good if it has good execution. And so if you don't execute the plan, then nothing got done and everyone's time was wasted. And so anyway, so fast forward, the reason why I bring them up is someone was telling me about this book called The Nine Lies About Work. And so I'm looking it up, and there are all these misconceptions that we have about what employees want and why they want to work where they do and what gives them job satisfaction. And they have found these common nine lies that we've made based on companies who are supposed to have this amazing culture, like Zappos and Google and some of those. And so I'm looking this book up and I'm thinking, wow, those author names, they sound so familiar to me. And then I put together, I've been preaching on their HBR article that they wrote for several years now. And so it's the same author. So tons of authors that I really, really love the books and can read them over and over. Absolutely.
Pharmacy's such a great place for that kind of that, yes, that, and do you know what you just did there? Because quite likely you're an earshot of half of your staff, of people hearing that. You're not going up to someone's desk. You're hearing it, and everybody can join in on listening or being nosy, at least, of what did they do so well that they got called out on it. I like that idea, Travis, of the Harvard Business Review, because it's my contention that a lot of times when you are looking up stuff online, a lot of it's clickbait of, like the author says, I am going to go against the grain. No matter what I really believe, I'm going to go against the grain to have somebody read this. And so let's say that customers like to be called by their first name. And just to get something ranking, you know, they'll say something like, why you should never call a customer by their name. And it's like, a lot of that is bull, but it was a way to get in front of someone's eyes. So the cool thing about that, I'm going to check out that Harvard review, is because it sounds like those are serious articles that make it in there versus just some 180 shift just to get people to look at it.
Yeah, and I study those. And so if you're a busy pharmacy owner and you don't have time or don't want to subscribe to the Harvard Business Review, then I can be reading all this every month and I can know what is relevant to you as you need them. And I can send you those articles, you know, so that you're equipped. And so that's part of the glory of coaching, is that's part of what you're paying me for, is to bring you the resources so you don't have to have all the answers. But I found some of my favorite authors through there. You know, I'm looking through my Audible list right now just to kind of give you more authors. Adam Grant is phenomenal. He's actually a professor at Harvard, but he's a business professor. He's wonderful. He's a young guy, but man, he knows his stuff. He has a lot to say about just employee engagement. I've never read anything by Simon Sinek that I didn't like. Simon Sinek has got some just really good advice to life and to employee performance. He's another one of those rare hybrids, you know, where he combines a lot of biology and science into what motivates us as people. And so he knows a lot of psychology, but he also knows a lot of science. I mean, he has one book that is just about neurochemicals and our hormones and how that affects employee incentives and how rewards make us, you know, repeat things. Dan Clark is another really good one. If you've not read any Dan Clark, he's got a book called The Art of Significance. Man, it is really good. I'm a big fan of it. Some of these, I tell you what, if you have anyone in a closed mindset, The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz is another really, really good one. It's an old book. It's really old, and it's really funny because it gives examples from the times of like 1930s and stuff. I mean, so it might give you examples of driving your Model T down this dusty street or something. I mean, it's an old book, but the concepts in there really break you out of your fixed mindset and get you to thinking creatively. So those are some of the highlights. So I stick around, you know, kind of those business and employee engagement, you know, biology of a successful business. And when I'm not there, I'm usually reading a parenting book or a religious book. You know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, how can I be a better Christian or how can I be a better dad? So it's kind of, I bounce between those sections. My nightstand probably has got 5 to 10 books on it at all times. So
are you doing that instead of any Kindle on your phone? You like the hard copies?
It depends on what kind of reading it is. I really learn really well by Audible, which is part of the reason why I do the phone calls. You know, you asked about that earlier. I'm such an Audible learner. So I do a lot of books on Audible or listen to them in my vehicle, you know, when I'm driving. I can retain so much of what I hear. I've got a little bit of a photographic memory, so I can remember stuff if I see it. But when I'm reading the print, I only want that in certain settings, you know, like an airplane or when I'm going to bed or that kind of thing.
Trav, it's been a pleasure having you on, and I can really tell your love for coaching. It seems like that goal couldn't be better of trying to increase, you know, the whole profession. So thanks for what you're doing, and it's been great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to share a little bit about this, and I look forward to connecting to some of the listeners.
All right, Travis, take care. I'll be following you.
All right, Mike, we'll catch up soon.
All right, God bless.
You too.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.